Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It is good to be back. We had a little holiday, so I apologise, but we got two more episodes before we have our normal holiday, but we are back, and we're back this week with a very, very full show. A panel, dare I say. Normally at this point I'd say, hello Jack Bennion on my left.
Hello Tony Simpson.
And then I'd say, normally on my right, I'd say, hello Ryan Champion, but this week he's in the middle. I'll say, in the middle, hello Ryan Champion.
Hello Tony and Jack.
And then over on my right-hand side, I'll say, hello Trevor Agnew.
Hello Tony, Jack and Ryan and everybody else.
There's no introductions required for Trevor Agnew. We all know what he is, what he does, and why we've probably got him on the show this week. Right, boys, we're going to start. Obviously, it was Sardinia at the weekend. The fallout from Sardinia is one which I'm going to come to you first, Jack. Myself and Rai had a bit of a debate on our little social media type thing that we all talk to each other on. We said we'd leave it there because we'd leave it for the program. I want to get your thoughts first and foremost, Jack, on the news that Chris has been left out of the lineup for Poland.
Absolutely incredible story, isn't it? My thoughts are, I can understand Citroën wanting to make a change, and Chris has clearly been having some problems at the start of the year. But my issue with the whole thing is the way it's been handled. Why couldn't they get Chris in a 2016 car for Poland, for example, to keep him match fit and take the pressure off that way? You know, at least he's still driving. We did talk about, as you said, we had a bit of a discussion when this initially kicked off, and I don't know how being outside of a 2017 rally car for a rally is really going to help Chris. I understand his thoughts about the psychological benefit of that, but for me, he's got to be in the car and getting seat time, and Citroën do have to shoulder some of the blame for the quality of the cars, and Chris has done himself no favours in some of the crashes that he's had, but also the car's not perfect, and to drop one of the people who can challenge Sebastian Ogier just seems bizarre to me.
Ryan Champion?
Well, I think Jack Bennion's just put it all very concisely. There's a couple of different things that we're dealing with, isn't there? Firstly, there's the performance of Chris Meek, and there's still no doubting that he is arguably the fastest driver in the championship. He's certainly the man who can take the fight to Sebastian Ogier, as we see, as the world's best. Does he still struggle for consistency? Yeah, of course he does. This was going to be his year. Let's not forget, he was joint favourite for the World Championship at the beginning of the year. With Ogier changing teams, with all the uncertainty, Meek was coming in with a brand new car, a team built around him, a car built around him, a car that he'd engineered, and, he was one of the favourites to win the World Championship. Yet here we are, the middle of the season, and it's been a complete disaster for him. As Jack just mentioned, that isn't all down to Chris Meek, which I'll come to in a minute. But, we'd have to say a couple of the incidents probably are down to Chris. Does that warrant leaving him out of the team? I think maybe that comes back to where they are in terms of a championship and where they are in terms of drivers. They're wanting to get Andreas Mikkelsen more experience. He is now part of the team. Lefebvre was obviously benched, if you like, for Sardinia. Maybe they're looking at this as a longer team game, and they needed a car for Mikkelsen for Poland if they wanted to keep him in it. Chris is obviously on a bad run. Were they looking at it that it might help things all around? But I agree with Jack. I think if you put Chris in a 16 car, okay, it's a step back, but at least he's out there, at least he's competing, at least he's getting the mileage. The second thing is, obviously the car is still a difficult animal. It's incredibly fast at times. We've seen Chris leading rallies regularly in it. We've seen Craig right up the top, even at the weekend. I think Craig was second fastest on one stage. But, I had a quick look at Craig's stage times from the weekend, and they were up and down and up and down. There wasn't much consistency to it. Mikkelsen, yes, it was his first rally in the car, but we didn't really see many flashes of speed from him. So, obviously things aren't all well in the Citroën camp, and the car is still difficult. Some of it maybe from the transmission, some of it from the suspension, but whatever it is, there doesn't seem to be a consistency with that car. And if you're driving the wheels off it, as Chris Meek is, and you're on the limit, obviously that's exacerbating his problems. So don't want to see him left out from a rally, but hopefully he'll come back stronger.
Now, the most interesting one I'm going to go to, Trevor Agnew, which hat are you going to come at with your opinions on this?
Well, I come at it from a couple of different angles. The guys have covered some things there. The 2016 car is an interesting thing, and there's no doubt about it. Craig got that car going very quick earlier in the year when he was in it. But if you look at it from a point of view, if he does go out in that 26 era, we're talking hypothetically, if he had gone out and pulled it in the 2016 car, and he drove the door hands off and he was on the podium, for example, what does that say about the 2017 car and Citroën as a brand? Sometimes you have to step back a little bit as well, guys. And I think we saw this last year with Volkswagen in Argentina, if you remember. Ogier and Hayden Padner, toe-to-toe discussion on the Saturday night in the service park. And at that time, if you think a little bit higher than Jos Capito and Volkswagen Motorsport, and you look at the board, we know that all members of the boards of car manufacturer companies are into motorsport. If they're not winning rallies, as was the case back then, because of the road position, somebody's going to ask the question, well, how come we can't get this changed? And there was a lot of pressure put on there. So if we move forward to Citroën now, one of Chris Meek's biggest backers is Yves Matton. He's backed him the whole way back to 2013 when he first got in the car. He'll be under a lot of pressure, of course, from Linda Jackson, the CEO of Citroën, the board members and people like that. So you've got to take that perspective and say, okay. And as Ryan rightly highlighted, you think back to the history of Citroën. So think back to the F2 car come out. It blitzed 306 Maxi, which was a fantastic car back then. There's a trick diff in it. Then if you think of the Zara World Rally Car, C4 World Rally Car, DS3 World Rally Car, up until Volkswagen came, and Didier Clément was in there for most of that time as the head of engineering or whatever his title is. So they've got a track history, especially when they take a year out, as Ryan said, to have a car that rightly so was favoured coming into the year. But it doesn't work in certain circumstances. And that's been catching all the drivers out, every single one of them. So there is an inherent problem with the car, and that is highlighting some of the things. Now, Chris, as you rightly said, he isn't blameless in this. And again, going back, if you look back over the years, he has, and he'd admit himself, he's had issues of concentration, problems with his concentration, either be on the recce or on the rally. And he's admitted to that. And we know when Chris Meek is having a good time at the end of the stage, he's smiling, he's laughing, a bit like Craig Breen was in Portugal. If you listen to WRC Live, you'd have heard him actually singing because he's so excited, but so pleased to be in the car. We haven't heard that from Chris Meek all year, even though he's won a rally, he's been up there, he's been contending. So we need to get to a point for Chris Meek to be able to relax into the car. And we know when he's in a relaxed, concentrated mode that he can do the times, and that's dead easy. So there is definitely a duty of care, I'd even say, from Citroën to try and look after their drivers. And in particular, a car that's reacting the way it is, and some of the accidents that are happening, it's just horrendous. I'm concerned that someone's going to get hurt, or, you know, and it can't go on like that. So what they're doing is they're saying, okay, take time out of the car, but they're not doing anything to rectify the issues that, it's clear, we don't need to get into what's wrong with the car because it's clear there's an issue there. So what have they actually said to Chris Meek? What do they want him to do? So let's roll forward to Finland, the first proper stage in Finland. He's on the start line. He's had a shakedown, maybe had a test in between. He's gone down a route. Now, test stage, 4 or 5 kilometres. And in Finland, just think of the conditions. There's not really these big jumps and et cetera, et cetera. Not really the compressions or the sharp bumps that we've had. We've seen the issues with the car. So he's on the start line. He knows in the wide roads that the car is going to be good. But what are they trying to say to him? You know, they said in Sardinia, go out and get the car around. You should be in the top five or hopefully on the podium and doing that. At the end of the first stage in Sardinia, 10 drivers separated by 10 seconds. You know, so if you're going to feather off, if you're going to, and people can't get their head around this, you're talking about a blink of an eye every kilometre. That, you know, that's the difference in the pace of these guys. It's absolutely flat out at the front. And then you get Lappy and people like that coming in. Then if you look at Mickelson, what he was told to do is go and learn the car. At the end of the first day in Sardinia, he was 1:57 off the pace. He was talking about in the interviews that he had to adjust his driving. contrast that to Lappi getting into the Toyota rally previous in Portugal and more or less being on Yari Matti's pace at the same time. So a lot of people are expecting Mikkelsen to get into the car and do something big. I didn't see that because Chris Meek and a Citroen, nobody's going to drive it faster than him. So let's go back to Finland again. On that start line of the first stage, what's he going to do? Chris is there to win rallies. He's not there to finish 7th or 8th. He's not there to get in the top 10. He's going to drive it flat out. So irrespective of what happened in Poland, that's what he's going to do. If you lift off a little bit and try and protect himself and the car for those situations where you know it's not quite right, if you can pick those out. And look at Craig Breen in Sardinia, where over that particular jump where the car bottomed out, you don't expect the car to do that. You don't need a lot of time to look out for those types of places in the recce when you've been used to wrecking and you know what a world rally car is going to do. So I just think that the engineering side of it has to be sorted in some way. You know, if they hadn't fell out with Sebastian Loeb, get him back in the car. You know, get him in the car. Get him to take for a run if you can replicate the issues of the cars going wrong. And I think it's just things. What's the expectation for Chris Meek on the back of the in Finland? What do they think taking time out of the car? How is that going to help somebody who's already under pressure, especially with another driver coming in? But I'll tell you now, I don't think Mikkelsen, the way that car is, unless they do something radical, I don't think he's going to be on the pace in Poland when he goes there. Rant over, sorry, it took a while.
No. This is why we wanted to hear what you had to say. For what it's worth, and I as I say, Jack, Ryan and myself kind of had a chat on Sunday evening. I kind of took away the emotion a little bit and looked at it from a business point of view, very similar to what you did there, Trev, with regards to obviously, you know, the powers that be at Citroen. I looked at it from a duty of care of looking after Chris and taking, you know, almost, you know, the terms I used on Sunday night was, you know, he's not untouchable. You know, he can be left out of the team as others have been left out, and it gives him that ability to refocus and what needs to happen for him to protect and prolong not only his Citroen career, but his WRC career. Now, Jack, you kind of went with that a little bit on Sunday night. Have you changed your opinion on that?
maybe I have a little bit. It's like you say, you know, you need to take the emotion out of it, and that's, you know, that's from a journalist's point of view especially, that's very important. You know, I can't be biased in this situation. You've got to take every single sort of element into consideration, which might seem, you know, sometimes I might sound like a bit of a cop-out, but it's just because I'm summing up all the different pieces of information and taking those in. But I would like to add just something to Trevor's point there, if that's okay with you, Tony.
Yeah, of course.
If I can just have a minute there. The one thing I did pick up on what you said there, Trevor, is that Chris Meek was signed to win rallies, and I've heard that bandied around quite a lot over the past sort of the past few days, in fact, you know, referring to Chris and the fact that, you know, he's the only person who can challenge OJ, and, you know, they signed him to win rallies. I completely disagree with that, completely and totally, utterly disagree with that, based on the fact that Citroen didn't sign Chris Meek to win rallies. They signed him to win a championship. And if you are going to, you know, as we've said already, yes, Citroen are to blame a lot for this, and this is not me having a massive go at Chris Meek now, but if they sign him to win a championship, then he's got to follow the blueprint that Sebastian Ogier has set out. So we know from the start of the year that Citroen has not been good enough to win every single rally. That's a fact. But we also know that the Ford hasn't been good enough to win every single rally. And has Sebastian Ogier rolled his car continuously? No, he hasn't. You know, he's taken running first on the road at one of the most difficult events, as we saw last weekend, and finished fifth. You know, he has taken what that car has given him and scored the best result, and that is why Sebastian Ogier is the best driver in the World Rally Championship, and that's why he wins championships. So what you've got to decide here is that are Citroen just in it for the Manufacturers' Championship and they just want Chris to win 4 or 5 rallies a year, and they're happy for him to crash the car every now and again trying to win the championship, and they're supporting him with a cast behind that are going to score the points they need to kind of support Chris there. But I think this decision shows that that's not the case, because I think the big elephant in the room here that no one seems to be sort of taken by the fist is that, you know, Stefan Lefebvre is still in the car. Now, all, you know, the four of us who are talking on this podcast now all know that Stefan Lefebvre, well, maybe not know, but assume that Stefan Lefebvre is not good enough to be a World Rally Champion in the future. He's not shown the pace in either of the World Rally cars that we've seen him in so far to even challenge for sort of stage wins, really, unless the conditions have been correct. So the big elephant in the room is, why is Stefan Lefebvre still in a 2017 car for the next round and Chris Meek isn't? Why is that happening? Because Chris Meek is clearly a better option in the car than Stefan Lefebvre. And you can only assume that Citroën needs to keep Stefan Lefebvre in because he's French or because there's some sort of tie to the governing body there, which is fine if that's what they need to do to, you know, to keep the team running and that's something that they're doing to bring new drivers into the team. Completely accept that. But there's got to be some sort of consideration there that, you know, Chris Meek is not getting a car because Stefan is in. And if that's the case, you know, you can't bring Mikkelsen in to replace Meek because it completely defeats the object of what they're trying to achieve if they want to win the Constructors' Championship.
Okay. Rye, a lot to go at there. Are you having what Jack's just said?
I mean, firstly, with Lefebvre, I guess Citroën still believe in him. I don't think, I mean, like Jack said, there may be commitments behind the scenes that that we don't know about. But Citroën in the past haven't been shy in taking somebody out of a car if they didn't see, you know, the potential. You know, you think about Sébastien Chardonnay for a while. He was going to be the next Sebastian, wasn't he? He was going to be the next big thing, and Citroën supported him for a while. And the next thing, he's gone from the team. I think they must still see something in Lefebvre, or else they wouldn't be investing the time and effort in him. You know, unless, like Jack just said, unless they're contracted to do so, which we don't really know. But I think that they are playing the long game here. I mean, what was surprising at the start of the year was that they weren't talking about going for the Manufacturers' Championship even for this year, and why not? Everybody had a new car at the end of the day. So everybody was in the same boat from that point of view, but already Citroën were talking about, oh, we're building towards the following year. Well, if they're building towards the following year, then rotating drivers is not such an unnatural thing. But obviously, this is a very high-profile way of doing it, and you know, they don't seem to be justifying why they're doing it. But
right,
yeah,
right. If I could just before you go then, before we go to Trev as well, I just wanted to pick up on something that Trev said there. And we mentioned this on the last podcast before we had our little break with regards to, you know, Carlos Sainz offered his insight and, you know, we discussed that. Do you see any way of, you know, just picking up on what Trev's there, maybe putting Loeb in the car and Loeb basically giving them some feedback? Because he's been all the way through the generations of cars that Trev mentioned there. And maybe, and there's a little part of me that would be quite sad if this happened, and hear me out on this. If he gets in the car and says, nah, it's not right, does that discredit Chris, or does that discredit Craig, or, you know, or Andreas? Do you see my point?
Yeah, there's two things. Firstly, as we talked about with Carlos Sainz, and some people said, well, why put him in the car? You know, he hasn't got the recent experience. It doesn't matter. He has experience of World Rally cars or experience of cars. He doesn't need experience of World Rally cars even. It's like we talked about with Tommy Mäkinen testing the Yaris. Yes, he's not a current driver, and yes, I'll come to Loeb in a minute, but just because a Sainz or a Mäkinen isn't a current frontline World Championship driver, does it mean to say that they can no longer feel the fundamentals of a car? Of course it doesn't. And you know, the issues that that we're seeing here with Citroën are fundamental issues. They're not minor setup changes. Now, if it was minor setup changes, you need the current drivers in. For big fundamental issues like dampers or centre diff, then a driver of standing and experience like a Sainz, like a Mäkinen, but particularly a Sebastian Loeb, would be incredibly useful. Does it discredit, you know, the drivers that have developed the car in Chris and Craig? I'm not sure it does, because let's not forget, the car's fast. When the car works, the car is incredibly fast and capable of setting fastest times, but it seems incredibly inconsistent. Now, you know, it could well be that it's only when they're getting on a rally that they're finding these situations, because if you'd found this in testing, you'd do something about it. So clearly, in all the test mileage that they did last year, then these peculiarities weren't coming out, which is odd, because they must have tested on big jumps, on big compressions, and the car must have worked okay. So I guess there's been a change of specification, but then they must have one that worked last year when they were testing. So firstly, any relevant driver could give another viewpoint on it, but secondly, this inconsistency is really strange, and obviously something they haven't picked up in testing.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents, or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Trev, from you know, you putting your other hat on here, from a driver that, as Rye correctly pointed at the top of the program, you know, he was joint favourite for the World Rally Championship, you know, by the bookies. You know, all of a sudden, bookies have got an interest in the WRC now. You know, from the coaching side, and certainly from the mind side, somebody like Chris Meek, how does he react to this? I think is possibly the key to all this, isn't it? At the end of the day.
Yeah, it definitely is a key for it. And he's going to put more pressure on him as a take pressure away. For me, I can't see any other way than putting pressure on him. Now, as I said to you, I take Jack's point from earlier, that Chris hasn't helped himself in the past. You know, he has said, as I've said before, that he has the odd issue with concentration, where focus, where he loses it at times. And you know, you can go right back to 2013 when he first got in the car, and some of the offs where he's just sliding off the road or arriving in too quick or whatever it may be. Now, that might be on the wreck, it might be on the rally, but he needs to, I think, he needs to say, right, okay, let's go back and look at all these accidents. I don't know whether he's done it or not, and find if there's a common denominator. Things that's happening, and can I link it back to the recce, or can I link it to the rally? Is there some sort of pattern there? Because I don't know about the rest of you, but I could see a pattern to some of them. And once he does that, then, is he going to get help from the mental side of things? Because that's certainly be a plus as regards the management of Citroën, and even the manufacturer say, okay, yeah, I understand the car is not right, but also I'm doing my bit for it. I'm trying to move it forward. And, you know, he's quite right when he acknowledged the work that the mechanics did and the technicians did in rebuilding the cars here in Argentina. He goes out in Portugal then, and he has the problem. And for the rest of the rally, it looks like, you know, he's not interested. He doesn't want to be there. Now, behind the scenes, they're probably testing things on the car. But that was very reminiscent of Rally GB last year, where after Mahurin, he was off the pace. And for the rest of the rally, because he wasn't able to battle at the front, he was in a bit of a strop. You know, it's very hard when you're working on the end of the stages to kind of get him to talk or anything, any positives to take from it. He really didn't want to be there. He just thought, okay, let's get through the mileage. Let's do what we have to do, and we'll focus on the world in the 2017 car for next year. Now, that's not a good attitude. That's not a good way to motivate teams and things like that. So there are definitely areas where Chris can work on to help. But I go back to the same thing. You know, it's a confidence thing. I take Jack's point on board, but it's a confidence thing. If you are fully confident in the car and you're daring it to spin and you move and you're relaxed in the car and it's almost unconscious, you don't have to think about it. It's just seamless. Craig Green has talked about it in a couple of occasions where he's had that feeling. I don't think Chris has had that feeling in this car. So therefore, until they get the car sorted, if you want him to drive around and finish in the top 10, he needs to throttle off a little bit. But as I said to you, the pace at the front now, and Ryan, hopefully, you know, what do you think, Ryan? Do you think that if you said to Chris Meek, okay, drive a little bit slower, just when the car, when you know the car is not going to wreck, because I don't think they actually know until they arrive at high speed, either on the recce, that these allergies to the compression, the type of compression, and the sharp jump, I don't think it's obvious, and I think that's what they're concerned about. I also think that that's why Mickelson was so cautious.
Yeah, it's just this inconsistency is really odd, isn't it? Because Citroën, like everybody else, did a huge amount of testing and they could focus solely on this car. And I just, that's what I can't get my head around, is why they haven't come across these issues in testing, and unless it's something that they've introduced since, in which case, why don't they go back a step? You know, they must have had dampers that were working last year. They must have had a center diff setup that was working in testing last year. So, yeah, for me, that's you know, really, really strange that they can't seem to find a cure to these issues, and we're now halfway into the season. And like you said, I mean, it clearly is knocking the driver's confidence. If you said to Chris Meek, drive slower, can he do it? He's not the best driver for that, is he? Let's face it. And that's not a criticism of Chris Meek. We want to see Chris Meek driving at his best, driving for wins. But Chris Meek driving for top five or top three even isn't something we've really seen from him in the past. And he's at his best when he can drive a car with confidence at full speed. And yeah, like you say, he finds it difficult to drive at an 80%, 90% speed.
On what you said there, right? I think just adding to that very quickly, you know, what we're in an unprecedented situation here in the WRC where we've just seen a car that was good enough to win a tough South American gravel event, and it was clearly the fastest car, and we've seen it quick enough to win Corsica. So we've seen a car quick enough to win it. The complete opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of what a car goes through over the course of an event and the surface and those kind of things. But anywhere in the middle, it just seems to be sort of bizarrely not suited to the road, which is, especially for me as a person who, you know, hasn't got a lot of experience driving cars or of the mechanical side of things, I cannot understand how a car can be so brilliant on one surface and then so brilliant on the opposite surface, but then nowhere in between.
But it's not only that, Jack. If you look on the rallies, if you take Craig Breen in Portugal, on the first morning, he was just so excited about being in the car, the best stage he'd ever driven, the afternoon the same. The next day, it changed a little bit. He had a wrong tire choice. Well, not wrong, the team made a mistake with the tire choice in the afternoon on Saturday. When it got to the Sunday stages, he couldn't drive the car. He was so deflated at the end of the stages. And that's just going from the normal or conventional Portugal stages into Pfaff, where the conditions have changed a bit more like Sardinia, and he couldn't get the balance of the car. He couldn't have a nice progressive car in there. So it's not just between rallies, it's between legs of rallies where the inconsistency is coming in.
I was waiting for Rye to pick up there, to be honest with you. I'll be honest with you. Despite what I said on Sunday, I'm still at the point where I still think Chris needed to be in the car, and I don't know how that was going to happen. And the reason, apart from that, I read something really interesting in the piece, Jack, that you guys put, that David Evans wrote as well, with regards to, and I'm going to ask Rye about this. I'm going to kind of bastardize it, if I can use that word ever so briefly, but the C3, Rye, you do not left foot brake it. That's not the way you drive the car. And it's something that Andreas Mikkelsen was kind of said, that he was told how to drive the car, yet he felt he needed to drive it his way at the end of the rally because he just couldn't kind of get on with it. Is that a really, really big insight into just how difficult this car is to drive?
Well, I haven't seen that, and I'm a bit amazed by that.
Sorry, can I jump in a sec? Because I think that's specific to Andreas Mikkelsen. I think he's the person who doesn't left foot brake. I don't.
Right. Okay.
I think that's something that Meek and Breen do. I think that is a thing that is specific to Andreas. And yeah, please feel free to continue there, Rye. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to clear that up.
No. Thanks, Jack. Go on, Rye.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd be amazed if that was the case, that you couldn't drive the car by left foot braking, because obviously that's been the only way that you drive these cars for 25 years, something like that.
It is Andreas who says he doesn't left foot brake, which surprises me massively, but go on anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't know, and now I'm going to have to go back and watch some onboards of Andreas Mikkelsen. Well, you two can maybe know better than me on that, because I've never noticed that. Are we saying Andreas Mikkelsen doesn't left foot brake? I'd be amazed.
I think, from what I know, I think it's a rally. Not on a rally by rally basis. In the most part, he doesn't left foot brake, but I think he has done on certain rallies where he feels that he absolutely needs to do it. But I think he's more comfortable right foot braking. And you know, we've seen people like Juha Kankkunen do it, so you know, it is possible to do. But I think it's more difficult to do with the newer cars than what it was previously. So if he does right foot brake, pretty impressive.
But when Juha Kankkunen started, you had to use the clutch.
yeah, but he was still right braking in the Subaru.
Yeah, he was. But that's why, and that's where it came from. You know, he started off with rear-wheel drive cars where you had to use a clutch, and in a rear-wheel drive car, you know, the left foot braking wasn't an absolute necessity, albeit, you know, people started to left foot brake rear-wheel drive cars. But, you know, Didier Auriol was another one who didn't left foot brake, and I was actually lucky enough to sit with Kankin in a Escort World Rally car, and we talked about it, and he said, yeah, the only time I really use it is sometimes over the jumps in Finland to settle a car. And absolutely, he didn't need it, and obviously he was still very, very quick, but that was coming from a background where, you know, he needed to use a clutch pedal, really, and he managed to evolve his style so that he was still more than quick enough. But yeah, I'd still be surprised with Mickelson, particularly growing up on the Lakes, and big influence from John Hoglund in his early career, who was one of the the big exponents of left foot braking and teaching left foot braking.
But go on, sorry,
if I want to jump in. I don't know if Andreas Mikkelsen's driven a car with an active center differential before he got in the, obviously he's been in three, 2017 car. So did he have that issue, first of all, in the Volkswagen last year when he was testing it? Did he have the issue in the Hyundai? Or is it something that's peculiar to the Citroen? And of course, with an active electronic center differential, you know, if you think about all the different sensors that come into play, and how that works to transfer the torque front and rear, by left foot braking or not, that completely changes what the car is doing. So if the maps and everything set up for someone who does left foot brake, then if you're right foot braking, that my simple engineering philosophy would mean that that's a problem.
Yeah, you need completely different maps for it, which is how. Which was the situation when, for example, ProDrive sold a factory car to customers, particularly a lot of the Irish drivers that didn't left foot brake. You had to completely remap the differentials. But Mickelson started in an active Focus. You know, let's not forget, his first cars he drove were, I think he had an O2 Focus in Norway, and then he jumped in the O3 Focus, the Ram Sport car. So they were all active cars. You know, and I don't ever remember that Andreas Mikkelsen had a very different driving style to anybody else. So, it'd be interesting to find out a bit more on that one.
Guys, just picking up on this, and again, you know, I'll make sure I quote this correctly so Jack doesn't have to correct me. Thanks, Jack. I nearly did get that wrong. But basically, in that particular piece we interviewed, he was asked if he thought he'd be able to make a difference in the car or his style before Rally Poland, an event which he won last year. Mickelson said, "I don't know if we've got time to... I don't know if we make this work in time for Poland. It's not so far away to Poland. Is it a quick fix? I don't know. Maybe it's something we can do in a test, but the car definitely doesn't suit my driving style." That's a big, big thing to say from somebody.
Yeah, I think.
Go on,
yeah,
sorry,
he's, I was just going to respond to what he said. I mean, he's said that he can adapt his style to the car, but that he'd rather keep his style because it's worked for him in the past. And I don't know, you know, Ryan and Trevor are probably better people to ask about that. But for me, that sounds logical, that if he's found success with his driving style before, then, you know, sometimes you do obviously have to adapt your driving style to different cars. But Mickelson doesn't seem to think that it's, you know, that not adapting to the Citroen is going to cause a massive issue. So, you know, I think you do have to take Mickelson's performance over the weekend with a pinch of salt, in the sense that, you know, stepping into a 2017 car for the first time since probably August last year, maybe even earlier. So, and a completely different one of that. You know, we can talk all we like about how good we think the Polo was going to be, but, you know, that was the last 2017 car he drove, and since then he's been driving an R5 car. So for him to make this step up is difficult, and under the circumstances that he was doing it, in terms of stepping into a Citroen that wasn't, you know, clearly wasn't, you know, absolutely perfect. You know, yes, ninth wasn't the best finish, but he did bring the car home without a scratch on it. And that's almost certainly, well, it is what Citroen said to him at the start of the weekend: please, you know, go out, learn the car and bring it home in one piece. And for me, I think it's difficult to read into his result over the weekend in terms of should he have been higher up. I think he's done what he's been asked to do there.
Now, and I'll come to Trev next. Has Andreas drove at Sardinia knowing full well he was going to get Poland?
You would think if he didn't know he was going to get Poland, he would have wanted to show some speed, wouldn't you? That's for sure. If he drove that rally at that speed at the request of Citroën, then he knew he was going to get another rally, because as a competitive driver, as a rally winning driver in the WRC, Andreas Mikkelsen wouldn't want to run around at the bottom end of the top 10 and not really show any flashes of speed, because regardless of how you're told to drive, if you're comfortable in a car, if you're of the ability he is, your speed will show, and it didn't at the weekend. So, to answer your question, I guess he must have known he was going to get another chance.
Do you think, and Trev mentioned this before, and it was a really, really good point, you know, Esker Pekka Lappi kind of came in on Sardinia and put in faster stage times in a car which we all thought, and I think everybody in the press, I think rally fans and everything else, was going to be the pig of a car. It has to be said.
And not only that, you know, going back to what Trevor said before about watching Chris in the car, about whether he's enjoying it or not, Lappy was laughing, you know, coming at the end of the stage and laughing and enjoying it. And the times were coming. And clearly, the Yaris was working very nicely in Sardinia, because it wasn't just Lappy. We also saw Hannonen running up the front for a change. And we saw Latvala up there, and three Toyotas in the top six, let's not forget, even after Hannonen's power steering problem. So, you know, the car was obviously working well there. And like you said, Lappy, great confidence in it and driving brilliantly.
Boys, I want to bring an end to this, so to speak, before we move on to a few other bits and pieces. We are very quickly running out of time, as we always do. Jack, if I can just have your thoughts summed up in one single sentence, what's going to happen and what the future is for Chris?
In a sentence, you
in
don't
a
know
sentence,
what?
Yes, in a sentence. I'm going to, as a journalist, Jack, I want you to be succinct and not drag it out.
I think I did that pretty well at the start of the show.
Okay, all right, fine.
There's one thing I will add, and I very much liked what Trevor said about sitting on the start line in Finland and not knowing what to do. And coming back to my point that I think this has been badly handled by Citroën, I just want to read you one quote from Yves Maton in the press release that came out sort of just after the rally. So in referring to Meek, he says, "This break will give him the chance to recharge his batteries and release some of the pressure before preparing for Rally Finland. He won in Finland last year after producing a perfect performance, so we hope he will come back stronger." Now, if that's not putting pressure on a driver, "so we hope he'll come back stronger," I don't know what is. And I completely agree with Trevor that being out for a rally and then coming back for Rally Finland, which he won last year at the highest average speed of any WRC event in history, is probably going to stick a few nerves in the back of his neck.
Right. You know Chris probably, well, certainly better than Jack and I. I don't know how well Trev knows him. You've been around Chris for many, many years. How do you see it?
Well, as Trev was his first co-driver, I'd say Trev knows him pretty well. But, it's so difficult for him because, you know, this is his big chance. This was his chance to become world champion. And, you know, we've gone from, as I said earlier, we've gone from almost expecting him to be fighting for the world championship to actually been nowhere. You know, there is nobody tougher on Chris Meek than Chris Meek himself. And the fact that now he's got more time to think is probably not a good thing for Chris, unfortunately. The positive that can maybe come out of it is, as Trevor said, he's now maybe got time to think, to look back and just see if he can find a reason for some of his own incidents. We've said that they've not been all down to him. But having said that, I guess we have to look at Craig's performances this year. Craig hasn't been falling off the road with the car. You know, the car has been as difficult to drive for him. Yes, maybe he's not quite at the same speed as Chris, but he's still been keeping it on the road. So hopefully Chris can just take this time and use it to regroup and to look at maybe why he's had some issues. But unfortunately, you know, we thought this was going to be Chris Meek's time to have confidence in that he had a long-term program. He had a long-term commitment from a team and therefore didn't have to get results every rally, and that it would come naturally. And unfortunately, everything that we hoped, we're back to square one again, where he's having to fight for his career. And that isn't when we see Chris Meek at his best.
Trev, as Bryce just said, you were his first co-driver. How do you see Chris responding to this? You know him obviously better than me. How do you see Chris coming back from this?
I think at the minute when he goes to Finland, he'll do what he's always done unless something's changed. He's setting his ways, no doubt about it. He has his way of doing things, and I don't know that he's been that open to listening to other ways. He might have behind the scenes, but I don't know of any evidence of that happening. But the other thing that we haven't really considered is you talk, Ryan, about him engineering the car. He certainly didn't do that. He's an engineer, and he gave a lot of relevant input. But if you think back to Richard Burns and Robert Reid heading to Peugeot, where French teams, in particular Peugeot, I'd assume that Citroën might be the same, although maybe it's not the right assumption. So we don't know what's happening behind the scenes. We don't know if Chris has said, this is what you need to do, and somebody said, no, no, do it this way, and there's a clash, whatever it may be. But for me, this is a slap on the wrist for Chris. There's no other way to look at it. It's certainly not taking pressure on. It's putting more pressure on. So it's up to Chris to go to Finland and decide, okay, well, what am I going to do? Will I drive it the way that I think it'll drive in Finland? Because I might get away with it, because there aren't as many compressions or those types of conditions where the car has been spitting me off from time to time, and just give it a go. Or do I do what they want me to do and just drive it in a way, and he'll end up 10th if he goes that route. So there needs to be something fundamental happen. Why do they not take Lefebvre out of the rally, use that car, get Chris in it and go test and see if they can sort the problem out? If they can't do that, if there's a reason why that's not going to happen, because there's a fundamental difference in what the car is doing or not doing and how they should fix it, it's a concern going forward. And it's a concern even in Germany. You take the stages around the vineyards in Germany, you've got those compressions in a road that's 1.5 times the width of the car. That's certainly going to unsettle the car and the evidence of what we've seen before. So they need to get it sorted fairly quick. And if it was me, I'd be firing all the resources, getting as many people to give us some feedback on it, to get the car sorted first. Once you get the car sorted, a happy Chris in the car, He'll deliver your wins for you.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Chaps, if we can just very, very quickly touch on Sardinia. Of course, we always assume our listeners know what the results are and everything else, but a very, very deserved win for Roy Tanak. Jack?
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Ott, and it's ironic that, you know, this Meek news came out and then, you know, everyone's talking about Meek getting dropped. We should be dedicating a whole podcast to how Ott Tanak's been dropped more times than you can shake a stick at it, hasn't he, really, in terms of his WRC career. You know, he's gone away, he's come back, he's gone away, he's come back. But, you know, the overriding thing has been the faith from Malcolm Wilson and from Marco Martin, and those two people deserve a lot of credit in this situation for giving Ott, you know, their faith and a rally winning car in the end, because, you know, it's my opinion that Ott wasn't in a rally winning car until Poland last year. I don't know if everyone will share that view. But, you know, in the past he has crashed too much and shown that, you know, he has got that in him, but, you know, he seems to have eradicated that from recent sort of history, hasn't he? And, you know, what a brilliant driver of the weekend.
Right, it's very, very easy, kind of, it's almost like the pundits kind of kiss of death almost. We do expect them to crack on now. It has kind of been coming, hasn't it? And the consistency has been there, of course, going back to Monte Carlo, the big yee-haw moments, to get the car home and stuff like that. The ability is undoubtedly there.
Yeah, and exactly that. He has slowly found his level of consistency. You know, it took a while, and yes, he's been dropped, and he's been back, and he's been dropped, and he's been back. But he has been around the World Championship, you know, for a lot of years, and done a lot of rallies, and, you know, and the confidence is obviously high. That his consistency is good, and also he's really seemed to be at home in this 2017 Fiesta, which isn't something we've necessarily seen from Sebastien Ogier. You know, more of the rallies, I would say Tanak's been comfortable and he's just been driving the car and getting on with it. He's had his fair share of mechanical issues so far this year that haven't always led to the results, but he seems to have often been able to find the sweet spot in this car, which Ogier hasn't necessarily.
Trev, is this mental strength from Ott, as Jack pointed out right at the top? He is like a yo-yo. He's been in now, he's been out, he's been in, he's been out. Obviously, Malcolm's constantly seen something in him, and, you know, has he protected him over the years? Maybe we didn't quite understand the reasons why he'd been left out. It was a way of protecting him and bringing him back a little bit further down the line.
Yeah, I think the difference, so in M Sport, is that Malcolm would keep with the driver for the end of the year. Maybe I'm wrong. I might not be able to remember back to when he did drop a driver mid-season, but most of the time he'd have faith with him and go through the pain of the crashes. Might just turn the corner, there's no doubt, but absolutely delighted to see him win a rally. But if you look at his performance, as Ryan said at the start of this year, he was definitely outclassed in the world champion. He couldn't get the same feel in the car, and he deserves it, and he'd win more, no doubt about it.
There you go, there you go. Boys, we're very quickly running out of time. I just wanted to just put this one to Jack very quickly. It's one we've debated numerous times. M Sport need Ford backing for me to stay, says Sebastian Ogier.
Yeah, interesting one this, isn't it? You know, it's Sebastian's already talking about what he's going to do next year and already seems to think he's got options on the table. Obviously, I'm not his personal advisor, so I don't know what those options are, but I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, you know, especially with the emergence of the Toyota, which he drove at the start of the year and chose the Ford over the Toyota, and you know, now the Toyota is showing a lot of pace. Citroen, I think at the minute we can probably rule out for at least the next couple of weeks anyway, for in terms of having a little chat about that one. But you know, he says there's got to be something at M Sport that keeps him there in terms of backing, so a big sponsor or Ford coming on board again, and whether that'll happen or not. You know, Malcolm seems to be quite positive that they're doing a lot of work with some sponsors coming on board, but only Ford will be able to tell you whether they're actually going to come back.
Very, very quickly, Ryan, do you see Ogier at M Sport next year, yes or no?
I'm still on the fence, in all honesty. If Ford don't come back, I think it's unlikely.
Trev?
He'll go where the car is the best, and it's actually, I spoke to Ryan last night, as in any other business for me, but if you were to decide now, prior to Poland, which car you're going to go for next year, which one would you choose?
Oh, you've took us to any other business very, very early here, haven't you? That's I wasn't expecting that.
Well, come back to it then. I didn't think we'd have time.
No, we'll come back to it. We'll very quickly come back to it. I just wanted to just quickly blast through a couple of things. Boys, it's kind of gone under the radar a little bit this over the last week or so, but I noticed something that Jos Capito's back at Volkswagen. I don't think anyone's noticed this.
Yeah, he's head of motorsport, isn't he, now? He's certainly some motorsport program. Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, now that was a very short tenure. At McLaren, do we see Volkswagen maybe looking at coming back? Chaps, is anyone going to pick up with this, or is he just going to let me talk myself into a corner?
No, they're not.
It's not head of motorsport. He's head of performance cars. Maybe again, is that right? Maybe it's not head of motorsport. Yeah. That's what he's job.
Okay. And one other thing as well, Jack, you guys have run a piece on this. Lorenzo Bertelli's car up for sale, the 2016 car on eBay. Is Lorenzo called time on his career?
It certainly looks like it, judging by this, doesn't it? It's on eBay for €400,000. So, you know, if you've got a bit of Trump change hanging behind the sofa, then go and get yourself one of the best looking World Rally cars in the business.
I thought he had a 2017 car this year.
I thought he did as well.
What do you mean?
Well, there you go.
It might be last year's car.
But the Italian privateer looks to have called time on his career, leaving one of the coolest looking rally cars around on the market. So I didn't realise he'd retired, to be honest with you, but still, there you go. Any other businesses? We'll come to Trev's last. We'll come to yours first, Jack. Make it quick and succinct as possible.
Quick and succinct as possible. Okay. I saw a few people comparing, sorry, it's Chris Meek again. I know we've talked about him all ago, but if we're ever going to do it, we may as well do it now. I saw a few people talking about Thierry Neuville, and I thought that needed clearing up, because I saw some people comparing this Chris Meek being dropped to Thierry Neuville, and some people saying that, you know, look, he's not doing so bad now because he was dropped and now he's, you know, he's back winning rallies. Very fundamental issue with that being the fact that he was dropped from the works team to the junior team, which was effectively the same 2016, same car anyway, with the same Hyundai backing, and effectively the only difference was that he wasn't scoring points towards the championship. So that is very different to a driver being completely dropped, and is also, as I said at the top of the show, what I thought they should have done with Chris Meek was to put him in a 2016 car and take the pressure off him. The issue there, as Trevor quite rightly raised, is if he did very well, then he would make Citroen look quite bad. And I think a lot of this sort of Meek talk you can attribute back to Citroen trying to make themselves not look bad. So, you know, as you said, Tony, they could get Sebastian Loeb in the car, but if he gets in it and says, nah, this is a load of rubbish, then Citroen aren't going to look very good from that, are they? So, you know, a lot of this, you know, you can get as passionate as you like about backing your home favourite, Chris Meek, but a lot of this does need to be attributed back to business, as you said at the start of the show, Tony, and it's any other business, and I'm attributing it to business, so that's my any other business.
Well done. You wrapped it up really, really nicely. Ryan Champion, you're any other business, please?
I like what he did there. You'd think he was a professional journalist, wouldn't you?
You would do, wouldn't you?
No.
No.
my any other business quickly is Ireland rallies, particularly in the WRC. We hear a lot of talk about the calendar, about whether we're going to China, whether we're not, whether we're going to go to the States. New Zealand, it was often said that, you know, well, New Zealand hasn't got a big car market, but neither has Sardinia, neither has Corsica. Now, you know, in the past, they've tried to move these events to the mainland. We saw Alsace host a fantastic Rally France, probably one of the best service areas in the WRC. And then they lost the backing of the local government, and now it's back on Corsica again. Sardinia, there was talk of it moving to the mainland, that the promoters wanted to see the rally on mainland Italy to encompass the whole of Italy. It's not happened. So are we saying as a championship, you know, we're just going to continue with Ireland rallies just because that's what the promoters, the local promoters can run, or are we still looking to encompass more people in these rallies? So just an interesting one as to where the championship's going in terms of rallies and, you know, where they're going to be held.
My any other business, because we know what Trev's is, and Trev's is better than all of ours put together, I think. Sorry, Ray, and Jack. My only other business is quite parochial, dare I say. I seen something the other week and I'd kind of forgot, and we've all kind of grown up with this on rallies, Trev probably especially, I know Rye has, and then me more latterly, that the Pastons rally news, which was such a big part of us going rallying, and for those people who don't know, Pastons used to produce a newsletter which they used to kind of print in the back of the car, and you get it handed to you when you came into service. It was like rally updates and stuff like that, and that service is now going to be retired off, and I think it's such a shame. I can understand why it's happened because of technology and things like that. But Rally News was, I think I've still got some of them in a folder from rallies that I've done. I don't know whether you have,
yeah,
Ray.
I find them floating around randomly.
Yeah. You do find them in random places. But I think they've done such a great job with that. But I can understand now technology's moved on that, perhaps, how it's gone. But we doth our caps to the whole of the Pastons family for the work they've put in over the years producing the newsletter when we were coming in and out of service. So that was my any other business.
Yeah, definitely.
That was my any other business.
Probably about 40 years ago, this started for the first time with Plum Tyndall. I think it was Liz Patterson, Plum Tyndall. Donegal International Rally, mid-70s probably, as the Ballyrain Bugle. It was the rally headquarters of the Ballyrain Hotel, and that was the Ballyrain Bugle. It was just a lot of feedback from all the drivers. That's how it started. So, yeah, shamed for that to go.
There you go. Now, Trevor Agnew, our kind of friend of the show, guest host, whatever category you want to put him in, without doubt he's got the best any other business this week. So if you want to repeat it for us, and we'll go through all of us of where we go. You're any other business, please, Craig?
Is you have to decide now which car that you're going to use. Car and team, obviously, they're going to use for 2018. You have to do it by the end of today.
Jack Bengen?
Hyundai for me. I mean, I think the Toyota's a promising prospect for next year. And I think, you know, all the noise they made about signing OJ, and they said they'd have a blank checkbook for it, tells me that they're willing to put a lot of money into that program. For me, you know, this year's about development of cars, and by next year, the cars should be fairly well sorted. So I think the teams who, you know, put the most money in are chances are likely to be the ones who battle at the front. Hyundai seems to be the best sorted all round at the minute, I would say. So, you know, if I was going to pick a car, I'd go to Hyundai. But, you know, also I think Toyota is a promising prospect, which I think Ogier could go to.
Ryan Champion.
Well, having had a brief discussion with Trevor Agnew about this last night, I know what he's about to say and where he's going to come from on it. But my initial reaction was the same as Jack Bennion. It was the Hyundai, because it's been very, very quick on every rally. They have huge resources to put behind the team. They've developed, you know, what is it? Is it three or four different cars over the last few years? You know, a new car every year, and then an R5 car as well as the 2017 car. Fantastic resources. They've you know, they really have built a very, very quick car for Thierry Neuville, but it hasn't been 100% reliable, and it's also been tricky to set up, as we've seen from a fantastic driver like Hayden Padden struggling to find the sweet spot. Hayden seems to have got it now. Seems to be a very quick car, but yeah, I think it's close between Toyota and Hyundai, but I would go Hyundai. I wouldn't go M Sport just from a question mark of ongoing development before we speak to Trevor Agnew.
I'm not going to sit on the fence and kind of edge me bet as you two have quite clearly, as far as I'm concerned. Yes, you've gone to Hyundai, but you also put the caveat in. I'm just going to put my dangly bit of squid on the table and go, I'd be going to Toyota. Trevor Agnew.
Explain why.
Okay. I think that car is getting better and better and better. And I think perhaps Juha Hänninen, unfortunately, and we spoke about Juha many, many times and the respect that we had for him when he did IRC and things like that. But Jari Matti has been there or thereabouts. Esker Pekka Lappi's jumped in the car and he's been there or thereabouts very, very quickly in that car. And I think with Tommi Mäkinen and the way he does things, I think that will be the car to be in next year. I really, really believe that. I will go out now on this particular day, which is the 14th of June, 2017, and say that a Toyota will win the World Rally Championship next year.
Jeepers.
Wow.
There you go.
Good luck being that, Trevor.
I'm going to be optimistic because we've covered all the teams. We've talked about Citroën a lot, but I'm going to go down the M Sport route. I'm very optimistic that Malcolm Wilson will get a major sponsor or food back in for the end of the year to help with the development of the car. It's proven that it's, the reliability is there. When they hit the sweet spot that Tannock seems to have, then it's definitely quick. Ogier had the sweet spot in Portugal, but he seems to have gone off the boil a little bit, probably due to the change in surface and the sand air conditions in Sardinia. I'm convinced they'll get that sorted, and on all surfaces, with a sponsor, or at least with better backing for 2018, I'm going to back Malcolm because he's taken a big punt. He's big investment, so let's give him the support, and I'd stick with him.
There you go, folks. Let us know your thoughts. You know where to find us now. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter. And, of course, you can go onto the website now, which is absoluterally.co.uk.
Before we finish,
hang on a minute. There's a caveat here.
Yes, because clearly, we know what our predictions are like. So, obviously, the best car for next year is going to be a Citroën.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Hang on a minute. Right, I'm going to have to take Trevor Agnew to task as well. Right, I've just realised, as I was just wrapping up there, you said how things are today, right? As things are today, M Sport do not have that big backer.
Yeah, they don't. No, I said... I'm saying you have to make a decision as of today. I didn't say as of today.
Yeah. So we've made our decisions based on today.
If you're an optimist like me and you know the selling skill of Malcolm Wilson, then you have to consider that.
Slight bit of backtracking. There you go. Folks, please let us know your thoughts, and I'm sure you'll disagree. By the way, if you are going to, you may hear the sting on our show, the Rally Car and Supercar Day at Bangor on Dee. I will be there with a rally car, and I can't wait to drive it, but still, there you go. Folks, it's been great. Jack Bengen, thank you. Same time, same place next week.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, see you next week.
You don't have to thank me for having you now, Jack. It's a given, isn't it? Ryan Champion, are you still grounded?
Well, no, I'm actually I'm not as grounded. I'm actually travelling the country, at least, but we'll be around next week and building up to one of the most exciting rounds of the British Rally Championship for a long time, Ypres.
Yes, and some of us may well be in Ypres. It won't be me.
One of us will be in Ypres, for sure.
Yeah, are you there, Jack?
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it.
There you go. Trevor Agnew, where are you off to next? A man who travels quite a bit. What rally are you on next?
Well, Ypres potentially my local rally now because I live in Kent. Unfortunately, I'm going to Munich on Sunday to do some work on piloted driving with the manufacturers. Quite interesting. There's another, any other business, a quick one. If you had to... so in other words, if we had to throw the co-driver out of the world rally cars... Who would win the rally if there's no co-driver?
Do you know what? Let's just
Britain discuss it next week. So
let's let's just leave that one hanging for the listeners. Folks, you know where we live. By all means, use the Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/absoluterally. I thank Trev, I thank Rye, I thank Jack Benyon, and I thank you most of all for downloading us. We'll be back same time, same place in your podcast hole next week.